Well, good morning to you. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're pleased to have you listening. In this part of Focus, we'll be talking a bit about the Japanese approach to art. It's something that people here in Champaign-Urbana have been interested in and talking about and learning about for a long time. It may seem a little bit surprising that here on the prairie we would have so many people interested in Japanese culture, but it is true. In fact, this week people here will be celebrating the dedication of the new Japan House on the U of I campus, which will be a place for teaching about Japanese art and culture. It will take the place of the old Japan House, which was removed for the new gateway on the eastern side of the campus. And a lot of folks here are very excited about it because it's a very beautiful building and something people have been dreaming of and working toward for a long time. Certainly there are many people who have contributed to this interest in Japanese culture here on this campus, and I don't want to slight anyone, but I think it's fair to say that one of the most important forces in this is our guest on the program this morning, Shozo Sato. He is an emeritus professor of art and design at the University of Illinois, and is the person who, back in 1964, started the program here on this campus in Japanese arts and culture, taught here for a number of years, taught many students about the Japanese theater form of kabuki, and retired from the university in 1992. And now has home in California, but continues to teach and to do theater. He has, in recent years, served as artist in residence at a number of universities. He's been guest director at regional professional theaters such as Wisdom Bridge in Chicago, Wichita Actors Playhouse in Kansas, People's Light and Theater Company in Pennsylvania, and has traveled around and continued to talk about Japanese theater and teach about Japanese art. And he is here back in Champaign-Urbana to spend some time and to take part in the dedication of Japan House, and we're pleased to have him here spending a little bit of time with us. As we talk, you should certainly feel free to be a part of this conversation, and we welcome that. All you need to do is pick up the telephone and give us a call. 333-9455 is our local number here in Champaign-Urbana, and we also have a toll-free line, 800-222-9455. At any point, you're welcome to join us. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Well, it's so nice to be able to come back to the campus and to this last minutes of this studio in WILL.
The clock is definitely ticking down. I told someone last week who was here on Friday that I thought they were going to be the last person to be the guest in the studio for the show, and it turned out not to be the case. It might be you.
I'm looking forward to see the brand new the stations.
It's very, very nice building. Yes, we'll definitely have to have you over to our palatial new digs, and you can see what they're like. Well, you know, I thought I wanted to engage you in some conversation about what the essence of Japanese aesthetic sense is. And as I was thinking about it, I'm not sure how much people will know about Japanese art, but maybe if they have seen flower arrangement or painting, and you ask them, can you describe it? What would you say that it was like? Probably the thing that they would talk about is simplicity. And maybe that's a good place to start. Is that a good word to use to describe the Japanese approach to things like painting or flower arranging or theater or music?
Yes, it is. And the simplicity and abstractions and such directional activity in creative arts is soothing to one's eyes and ears and feelings, and yet it is very difficult how to make it things appear to be simple and then effortless. In black ink painting, there appear to be effortless few strokes of a black ink stroke on white paper. And then, wow, it's so nice, but takes years and hundreds of strokes before you're able to do that. And so the simplicity is, it's wonderful way, and yet it demands tremendous discipline.
There's a particular style of flower arranging, and I don't recall the Japanese name. The thrown-in style, I think I've
yes,
seen it.
Yes, it's a nage-ile. It literally thrown-in.
Thrown-in.
It's a translation.
And this is the someone might have seen such an arrangement, and it's actually easy to describe because it might, in fact, consist of a single flower.
Yes.
One container, one flower.
One flower.
And I'm sure that someone would look at that, and they might say, well, that's very nice, but you know, how hard can that be? I can put one flower in a container, and
yes.
And why is how could that be such a complex?
According to the size and the colors and formation of utensils, flowers, and its materials also have to be counted. And then, what type of flowers you have in your hand, with the leaves or without leaves? And what color and what size of flower, what texture the flower is, and what kind of stems that is. And all this have to be instantly evaluated. And then see the flower vase. It should be going straight up or to the right-hand side or to the left-hand side. And how much of a space between mouth of a flower vase to the blossom itself. And all that have to be calculated perfectly. Then when you finish it, looks natural. That's the only way you can see the flower in the flower vase in that manner. But to get to the point, you do need the eyes to judge all these qualities and then the parts, which takes years of training.
Is the creation of such an arrangement, should that be a very seemingly spontaneous act? It's not something that you should be sitting and thinking for a long
yes,
time about
yes.
how to do. It's supposed to do. You just sort of do it, and all those things come together because you have spent time thinking about it and learning
right.
about it and observing
yes.
and seeing other examples of that. But it should really be you should just kind of sit down, put the container down, clip the flower a couple times, put it in, and there you have it.
Yes, and that's what you were speaking about is the art of chabana. Tea ceremony flower arrangement. They have strict rules. You are to ever hold a materials on your hand only 30 seconds. And before 30 seconds pass, you are to make the decisions of which leaf to be eliminated or twisted and then slide it into the container and then splash a little water and then to be finished. And that's spontaneous and then as simple. And yet, that sense of judgment, keen eyes to judge, which require tremendous years of training. On the other hand, like a Ricca arrangement, which is the most ornate style, you can use up to 15 different kind of materials put together, wire them and twist them, and all this is technical-oriented flower arrangement. It's gorgeous to look at, and it takes hours, literally hours, days, in fact, to make one arrangement. So there is two extreme opposites. One is the rich and in every aspect, and then one is simple and beautiful in every aspect. And so the two different type of art exist. That's the typical way of my explanation to American audience, that the Japanese enjoy maximum art and minimal art. It appears to be simple, but one can go into this such maximum enrichment, such as Kabuki theater. And Kabuki theater is maximum enrichment in the theatrical form, in the colors and the movements and even the costumes. It appears to be simple, but when you pull a few strings, the inside out and call trick costume or hikinuki, and then changeable character on the stage right in front of your audience, and the same way with the wigs. It appears to be a simple wig, but when you pull a few strings and then the whole thing changes, you know, all these fabulous, unexpected aspects behind the simplicities. And those are the typical to the maximum art areas. And the paintings, to the poetry, to the landscape, everything in Japanese sense of order or design can be found in this maximum or minimal art. But most of the minimal art have most strongest influence of Zen philosophy, where we strive for elimination of unnecessary aspect of materials, and then trying to find the true beauty of its materials or subject. And that requires much of not only technical, but the mental and the spiritual discipline to be able to find what is the true beauty of a flower, a single flower from the ground, the field, and such.
Well, as I understand it, the traditions, various traditions of Ikebana, of flower arranging, these very complex arrangements,
yes,
were, this was a form that was first pioneered by Buddhist monks,
yes,
and they were done as arrangements for temples.
Yes.
And then that stream sort of continues, and people still do those kinds,
uh-huh,
of arrangements. But then there have been other styles, simpler styles, different kinds of arrangements, and the kind that are in flat containers, and then the very simplest style, the thrown-in arrangement. But all it seems that all of them, one way or another, do have very strong connections to religious or philosophical traditions in Japan as well.
Exactly, yes. That's the fine art of Japan, yes.
So all of those things are all bound up together, and it's really,
exactly,
you can't really separate them out.
Well, it's a contemporary artistic creative act. Try to get into the pure technique, pure personal, and then try to overrule any of the traditions and then philosophical development of the past. However, any of these contemporary art have to have some foundation, beginning point. That's all the traditional arts. It's the foundation of this contemporary creative act. But I'm so pleased to find you're the expert of flower arrangement.
No. I'm very interested. Maybe someday I will have to actually start learning, really learning. I'm a little bit overwhelmed by just how complex it really is. But a little bit, I know, just a little bit.
Join us in Japan House.
Our guest this morning, Shozo Sato. He's an emeritus professor of art and design at the University of Illinois. Now has a home in California, but occasionally comes back to Champaign-Urbana and continues to travel around the country doing what he did here, teaching people about Japanese art and culture. Maybe a lot of people in Champaign-Urbana, central Illinois, will know him for the many kabuki performances that he organized here on this campus, where he took students, probably many of which had never known anything about kabuki before, and had taught them some of the basic elements of the form, and that had done plays, some of them traditional Japanese plays, but also some of them adaptations of Western stories from Greek theater, from Shakespeare. Shakespeare seemed to lend itself very well to kabuki styling. And taught many people that. He taught flower arranging and art and dance and many things. And he's here in Champaign-Urbana for the dedication of the new Japan House. Well, that's going to happen on Friday?
Friday,
On the 19th. Right. And then that'll be a place where for now, hopefully many, many years to come, people will go and learn about flower arranging and tea ceremony and other things like that. And questions are welcome, too, if somebody wants to call in here, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. You know, I was also thinking about how Japanese gardens, some of the most beautiful that you will see anywhere in the world. And the experience that you will have as you walk through one is, it will seem like a very natural place, as if you were just walking through a forest or someplace like that. But of course, there is very very detailed grooming that takes place that is not obvious and probably shouldn't be obvious. And I wonder whether if in some way the Japanese aesthetic is kind of to take nature one step better. Just in a sense, improve upon nature.
Well, that's become very obvious aspect in Japanese ikebana, the flower arrangement, or in landscape designs. And the unique to Japanese landscape is not to change characteristic of nature, but trying to enhance the characteristics of materials. And obviously, sort of a Japanese, well, humanistic egoism, that you want to have something beautiful and right next to you, rather than you have to walk miles to get to see the beauty. So you end up building your own gardens in the backyard. And so then you like to have waterfalls and the streams and the ponds to indicate this to be the great oceans and such. And then the forest and then the bridge over the streams. And all these somehow miniatures of grand nature to be in right next to you. And so you can just hop off from your living room and then you can walk through. And yet most of these design concepts are to be seen from your living room or tea room, whatever, from there as a three-dimensional painting. And so aspect of a prospect. And from here to there, and the tree behind is naturally grown forest, but that's to be incorporated. And so between the natural forest as a backdrop, what do you create to incorporate that nature as a part of your designs? And then you have to crypt branches here and there, twisting with wiring here and there to bring out the characters. And so you won't have 500 years old pine trees in 10 years, and then you really have to give a hardship to the trees by bendings and cutting here and there. But eventually that can be done, trained, and then the tree appears to be very happy there in the grand new fashion and style and new personalities and such. But the most beautiful part of this is give that crystallization of grand beauty of nature in where you can reach, where you can walk without too much of effort. And that is a typical Japanese landscape design. Of course, that too you can find in maximum minimal. Maximum, that one is like a palace and great residence or castles or in imperial palace and such. One can walk around, actually walk up to the top of a hill, come down from a hill and along the stream you can walk over the bridges and such. And then there you find beautiful koi fish in gold and silvers and reds and all the beautiful and huge, something like a 36 inch long type of big koi, over 100 of those. And two, simply white pebbles as one occasional here and there rocks or one rock erected and flamed in with a flame, fence and such. And then you sit there. You cannot walk on, of course, and because the ground has been graded to beautiful patterns. And so you sit there and then to reflect yourself, contemplate. And so there's a different kind of landscape. It's unique, I think. And so in this coming landscape design for New Japan House, Professor Jim Beyer have been designing this different type of landscape, so that a visitor to the New Japan House can see the Zen type of garden with the pebbles and rocks, I should say, and then tea ceremony gardens, to stroke gardens over the bridge and pond. And so every aspect of Japanese landscape design can be appreciated there in a few years. Of course, the landscape takes a long time to mature the plants and grass and such. And hopefully, eventually, the rocks will have a moss and lichen will grow with this much rain, maybe much easier, too. and so this will come up sometime in the near future.
It sounds wonderful. I've sort of driven by it and have seen it. It looks like a very handsome house, but I'm certainly looking forward to seeing it. And I think that then people really will gain an appreciation also for another great Japanese art, and that's the Japanese art of constructing things out of wood.
Yes.
We were talking about that a little bit earlier, about the fact that the Japanese probably they may indeed be the world masters of joinery and have just remarkable ability to build buildings without using any nails or without even using any wooden pegs, perhaps, with a real appreciation for the material, but also a real sense about flexibility and structure, as you said. It was because of the fact that there's a lot of seismic activity in Japan. There are earthquakes, and you have to have buildings to be able to withstand a little bit of shaking and then
able
come back
to move.
To
yes. Yeah. And so for that, when you visit New Japan House, obviously due to university building code as well as the climate of this Midwest, humid, steaming hot summer, which is not so different from Japan, but in winter time, such a cold weather, and we're not able to hold traditional Japanese architectural design. And so we housed Japanese rooms with Western technology, in a sense. And so the house is built in Western structure, and then Japanese rooms are built within. And with this, I'm sure most of the audience will be stunning to see this beautiful woodwork. None of the wood has been painted or stained or waxed. It's a natural, just simply beautiful combination of different type of natural wood were joined and then gathered and then formed. And simple and yet so beautiful. And then almost like a Mondrian oil paintings by the French, the contemporary artists. They're giving space to be divided with black lacquered sliding doors, and that is a beautiful accent with different tone of natural wood, and that's crossing here and there, and then, and that division of a space without any obvious ornamentations is awesome experience. That is the most perfect example of Japanese architectural beauties. Without any ornamentation or paint on wood or stain, and they're simply natural. And then we are to appreciate aging process. And so every year, and 10 years from now, 50 years from now, this natural wood eventually age, and that's to be appreciated. And therefore, we don't want touch unnecessary with greasy hand and such. And then that wood will not turn color evenly with other part. So show great respect to things of beauty. And that is the essence of Japanese art, I think. Mm-hmm. The great beauty, man-made, or the nature, natural. And then whatever you see the great beauty and struck by the beauty, and then we show great respect, and then eventually we consider they are the god. And so if I expand this idea, Japanese have gods of 88,000, 8,800, and all this. Everything other than human being is considered a god. And so the beauty of the gigantic boulder in the mountains, lichens and moss covered, and then that is admired as a god of the mountain. And as such, and anything beautiful, extraordinary beauty is the god, then we simply bow and then show great respect to that beauty. So even the man-made as Japanese rooms, if it's so beautiful, then we want to show great respect for that man's craftsmanship and their sensitivity to be able to join this beauty together, of materials together, and then we try not to disturb by unnecessary treatment by, carelessness. Mm.
We are about midway through this part of Focus, talking with Shozo Sato. He's an emeritus professor of art and design here at University of Illinois. For many years taught Japanese art and culture on this campus. He retired in 1992, and since that time has continued to really do the same in a lot of other places. He's been artist in residence at a number of universities. When he first came to the campus, he held classes in his own apartment and then moved to the old Japan House, which was taken down to for the university to put up their new Eastern Gateway, which is a nice space over there along Lincoln Avenue. And now Japan House will have a proper home on, I guess, South Lincoln.
Yes, 200 South Lincoln.
In the area where the university now has gardens.
Absolutely, yes.
And it's a very nice area.
Right behind the president's residence.
And questions, again, are welcome, 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. I think perhaps, you know, people might be interested in hearing a little bit of the story of how it is that you came to the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. How did you end up here on the prairie?
Yes. I was running a small private art school in a place called Kamakura, which is for 15th century capital, warrior government, which is shogunate government, Bakufu, its capital, about 50 miles south or east of Tokyo. And then there I taught many different art forms with my peers. And one day we had visitors, the American professor from University of Illinois, and late Professor Margaret Erlinger. She was the head of the dance division at that time. And her Fulbright granted research was interdisciplinary Japanese artist activities. The Japanese artists often go on not only one media, but multiple media to be practiced and created in that way. And in fact, the tea ceremony is a good example. You can't just learn how to make a bottle of tea. You have to be flower arrangers as well as the interior designers and all that. You have to know everything about it, art and craft. And that is a good example. And so the Professor Erlinger found me through her friends that happened to be my student, the American dancer. So she appeared in my classroom, and then she was quietly taking notes for several weeks. And then finally she said, would you be interested in coming to University of Illinois to do exactly what you are doing here in Kamakura? And during the 60s, all Japanese youth look up America as in heaven. And so, of course, I like to be here. I like to go to the United States. But luckily, at that time, I had offering from Harry N. Abrams Publishing Company of New York to sign a contract for my publication of Art of Arranging Flowers, the big green cover, very popular book. And so they requested for me to be in the New York City for at least 6 months to increase the page of the book. Originally, that was only 200 pages, and they want to make it definitive book on Ikebana, and it became, and over 400 pages. So I have to be in New York City and continue to do the flower arrangement. And so the two invitations came at the same time, and so I said to myself, this is the Buddha's wishes to move on to the big country. And so I pack up 5 tons of teaching materials, flower vases, and then tea ceremony equipment, the kabuki costumes and records and all sort of things. Then came with that a cargo ship to New York. And then from there I finished the Ikebana part of my work for the publishing company. And then came to U of I with the teaching materials. And then start introducing all about Japanese art and cultures. My main activity at that time was in union, student union space for the international festivals. And then if a professor of this or that asked me to come to the classes to do demonstrations, and then different churches and religious organizations asked me to do the tea ceremony demonstration or Ikebana demonstration. So my years has been very busy. And everything somehow works out in perfect timing, I guess. This is the uniqueness of our life. It's the karma, the destinations that I did not set, but someone above me have set for me, I guess, for everyone. And that is the peak of a hippie cultures in the late 60s. And so all this young student at U of I was showing great interest in Japanese arts supported by Zen philosophy. So they wanted to have these demonstrations, not only demonstrations or lectures, but they want to learn actually in the classrooms. So they went on to university administrations, and then that's how my classes on Japanese traditional art workshop, it was the title for my course, in art department was established during 1968. Usually this type of activities were housed in Asian studies in the field, but uniquely this was in art department, and I think this university's art department is one of the largest in the whole United States university system. So they can have another small division on Japanese art. And so that's how luckily we were able to establish the classes. And then now you know.
We have a caller to talk with. Why don't we do that on our line number one?
Hi. My question is, what is the function of I've seen stone basins in traditional Japanese gardens and books and elsewhere, the water basins, and I was wondering if their function is aesthetic or if it also has a utility as well.
That is called tsukubai basins for water, which is before you enter into the tea ceremony room. The invited guest supposed to be kneel down, squat down to the ground. That's the tsukubao. That's the Japanese terminology we use. And then they take a dip of water and then wash left hand, right hand, and rinse your mouth. And then you're physically purified to move on to the tea rooms. And this concept comes from Japanese Buddhist temple or Shinto shrines. They're usually at the entrance area of this religious space. They have public basins, water basins, where the people go there and wash their hands and such. And that is the functional aspect. And yet, aesthetic aspect is beautiful, and beautiful to listen to the dripping sound. And then that gives a very tranquil as a cleansing feeling too. So it had both functions.
Well, that's sort of what I thought. I just wanted you to hear that from your mouth. That's good. Okay, thanks a lot.
Well, thanks so much for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Other questions, comments are welcome. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. One of the events that's planned for this weekend to celebrate the opening of the Japan House is a symposium to discuss the tea ceremony.
Yes.
And in fact, you're going to have a rather prestigious tea master coming from
the
Japan.
The Grand Master from Japan. That's unheard of. Receiving him in this midst of cornfield, if I may say so, is never dreamed of this to be possible.
There is... You know, to say that tea ceremony is just about making and drinking a bowl of tea is the one of the greatest understatements one had ever make. But again, it's one of those things that I think people will sort of wonder. Well, what is it really all about? It's not just about having tea. It's about much more than that. But you know, how do we go from there and talking about what really it is all about?
Yes. I guess because we're in Japan, the Japanese structure of a so-called religion is quite different from European background. And the basic Japanese religion is nature worship in Shintoism, or Buddhism also. It's the same kind of, they simply follow the law of nature. And then there is no strong guidance. You shall not, in such Ten Commandments and like that type of structure has not existed. And therefore, through artistic discipline, one trying to refine and renew yourself. And that is the way of Japanese art and martial arts practice. So not only technical development, but you reflect yourself through this practice of tea or flower arrangement or any form of martial arts in that concept. And therefore, tea ceremony is, yes, indeed, the ultimate end. End process is you end up with a bowl of tea and to consume. But that process from how do you wash your hand and how do you walk on beautiful stepping stones and how do you enter to the room and how do you show respect, proper manner of respect to wall hanging or flower arrangement and understanding the statement of wall hanging, which is usually a strong Zen statement teaching aspect, and then see the beautiful arrangement of tea equipment and the same darkened room with incense scent and such. This whole atmosphere, as well as well-trained manner of conducting, making bowl tea in most artistic, simple and yet most artistic manner, which eventually your mind and spirit are purified. And then after you finish the tea ceremony and come out of the small entrance of the tea room and then standing back on the ground and seeing bright sun and great nature, and then most of people take deep inhale of release from the intenseness or contemplation of the tea room, as if you were in cathedral or church or temple. And then you come up from there and then, and then look at each other's eyes of invited guests and say, isn't it wonderful? We're living together. We share that beautiful moment. And that's the whole function of a tea ceremony, which is we try to have a religious experience without calling up gods or deities. But between the human being, with artistic process, we try to remove all dirts from our spirit and mind. And that's the tea ceremony. Therefore, the Grand Master who is going to visit us, the 15th generation, and their ancestors was started at end of 1500. And then three brothers have separated and then created their own tea school. They are the main tea schools of Japan. So this person who is coming is direct descendant of 1500, the founder of Senke School of Tea. That's almost like loyalties, you know, nearly 500 years of history right in his blood. And he maintained that tradition of tea ceremony and grandmaster. And because especially this grandmaster, Senno Soshitsu, is so aware of international peace. So he have gone around the world, dedicated tea houses and then lectures and such. So he received a tremendous amount of honors from the governments of a different country to academic societies. So I don't know how many honorary doctor's title he have. That's a remarkable person. So we feel great honor to have him here to give a speech for opening of a new Japan house as a proof of seal of the proof. It's wonderful.
Oh, excellent. We have about 10 minutes left with Shozo Sato. We have a caller. We'd be happy to take other questions from people who are listening. The number, if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. Also, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And again, we have someone here locally on our line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say to Mr. Sato, thank you for giving those classes in Ikebana at the florist shop, I believe it was Abbott's, on Prospect.
Art Floral.
Many, many, many years ago I took
yes.
those.
Yes.
And I have loved Ikebana ever since. I practice it with my garden flowers.
Uh-huh.
And also enjoy all of your plays.
Thank you. And now Mrs. Gunji, Professor Gunji, is carrying on the tradition of Japan House Ikebana activities. So I hope you will go and see as well as take up classes again.
Well, I did enjoy, they had something at the Krannert.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Spring ago, and I enjoyed that. Yes, every time I get a chance to, I do. I also want to ask you a question about removing the shoes when you enter.
Yes.
Will people be asked to do that?
Yes, of course.
They go through?
Yes.
And would you explain the purpose of that, please?
One, so that we can remain and keep the interior of the house clean, but same time there is aesthetic experience. When you walk with shoes on, really doesn't make any difference if you're walking on a paved street or carpeted floor. You don't have any sense on your feet. But if you remove all this and then not exactly barefoot, but even wearing socks, walking on cold wooden floor to move into the tatami mattress floor, the textures and cushions, softness, all different. And for that reason, in traditional Japanese home, wherever the water or use, like a bathroom or kitchens or any of these areas, bamboo floors or the wooden slats or such giving texture to warn you, even in the midst of darkness, you know you're in water-using areas. And so this way, the texture and the temperature of the floor are much respected by Japanese.
Do the Chinese do this also?
No, unfortunately, well, I shouldn't say that. totally different style of life, which is they wear shoes and they sit on the chairs and sleep in the bed, very much in Western style. So the wearing of shoes is a daily activity. But Japanese home, due to the Polynesian cultural background, the floor has to be elevated to be able to ventilation during steamy hot summer. Can go through underneath of the floor to keep the house the cool. It's very different from building house on the ground in a Chinese style or Western style. From that idea, it's very natural that while you're going up, remove your shoes and then get up on the floor. And then since you're high above the ground, you end up sitting on the floor. That's how the Japanese way of life developed.
Very good. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for calling.
As you were talking a little bit earlier about tea ceremony, I was thinking about how there seems to be an unusual balancing between intentionality and spontaneity.
Yes.
And that there is a sense in which in a structured setting like that, in a stylized setting, that there is in every step and everything you do a real intentionality. It's very deliberate. And yet at the same time, you can't do it like that. It shouldn't be that deliberate. This is very interesting, that these two very contradictory elements here should be both present at the same time.
Yes.
How does one achieve that intentionality and at the same time have spontaneity both?
Well, this is the wonderful aspect of a tea ceremony, which overlaps the image and experience of our daily life activity and artistic activities. And we see this replica in this too, such as music. You see the seal of music, you to perform. And if everyone perform as the music seed called for without your personal involvement, that's not exactly art. That's dead art, dead craft. And then you start adding your feeling, and then that makes art. In the same way, the rules are set in a tea ceremony. But according to the situation, with your rich judgment, intelligence, and then your sense, you are to start altering here and there to make that ruled set tea ceremony as very personal and unique one as possible. And that is the ultimate goal in the tea ceremony and ultimate goal for our life, I think.
Do you find that as you continue to practice flower arranging or do tea ceremony or do dance, the many things that you do, that you still find that you are learning new things, that as many times as you have done these things, there continue to be ways in which it is a new experience?
Always. That's why I like to keep up teaching and introducing. And in this process of teaching the century-old technique that you've been teaching every day, but always you find, oh my goodness, I didn't know this was for this function, this purpose. Everything has been taken granted. And then that's how I accept it. But we find so many fresh things in the teaching process. So always, every day is a teaching and learning from life.
See if we can get one more call here. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's something else. And perhaps anyway, that's a good point for us to stop. The dedication of the Japan House will be on Friday, and I think it may be too late now for people to take part. Although, is it still possible?
It is already sort of invited guests only. Already, we have more than 500 people. We don't know what to do with that many people in the house, and so I hope general public will wait for a few more weeks, and so the ground will be set because it's still mushy. So those ground is not ready to receive the audience yet. But I'm sure they will announce grand opening for general public. And then at that time, I hope people will join us in Japan House to see how beautiful, authentic that this Japan House is. One I created in old Japan House was a purely theatrical effect of Japan.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for being invited here.
Our guest, Shozo Sato, Emeritus Professor of Art and Design here at the University of Illinois.